Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Jeremy Lambert. You know him as the writer of Buffy the Vampire Slayer from Boom. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Lambert. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Hello, hello. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's definitely my pleasure. I'm a big fan of yours, especially with what you did with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or are doing.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So a question I always like to ask is, what inspired you to become a writer and who were your earliest influences?
Oh, good one. I mean, honestly, it's just the love of story across all mediums kind of just, you know, was what, propelled me into it. I was so completely obsessed with Lord of the Rings that I remember, you know, and as you can probably see, or at least the people watching can see behind me with the replica weapons everywhere. But it was the first moment after Fellowship of the Ring ended when something clicked for me in that people actually made this, and that's an actual thing that you can do or at least aspire to. And that sort of led into a bunch of different things, obviously with comic books as well, where it's just like I'm staring at the credits in a new way and figuring out that, you know, I can follow individuals and creators and people that are actually creating these things. And it definitely didn't become real for me until, you know, a few years, you know, after that, I would say. But even, you know, even earlier than that moment, there was just an obsession with stories of every kind, right? The movies that you can get on TV, but also a lot of the comics, that I was getting, were ones that I was able to, you know, get from Free Comic Book Day or from, maybe a collected edition at a library at, I grew up in Bowie, Maryland, and there was the PG County Library there. And I would just go and basically just get whatever I could and, you know, get my hands on anything. And that was my main experience with comics at an early age. And so a lot of it, you know, I remember, there was a Marvel Adventures, line, for younger readers. And that was one of my gateways into it and getting, you know, particularly the Hulk and Thor and Spidey and a lot of that. And, I mean, I think that, my biggest influences, definitely, you know, hit me at different times. And I'd say probably the first, like I said, I think in of stories in different mediums and different formats and, mm-hmm. and the strengths of each medium and format and kind of learn that through my influences. And I would say probably that, you know, for me, when it comes to really comics and movies and everything like that, it encapsulated a lot, for me in my teen years with Neil Gaiman, in particular. Because that kind of led to so many different other things. You discover so many artists through a writer like that, you know, and so you start in front of Colin Doran and, you know, a lot of different, and you just kind of trace everything and you start, it's like a tree, you're just branching off into a thousand different things, but it's those gateway things that everyone, you know, finds, at any point in their life where you just start going down those different paths. And, I think, you know, he was probably one of the people that opened me up to the world of comics and artists and then there's so many that come to mind right now, but I would go on for another 30 minutes, you know, on that front. But now it's just, you know, it's still happening on a, you know, almost a daily basis at this point. It's just like, I'm, you know, going through Emily Carroll's work or, you know, in whatever medium, like Kelly Link or, you know, so many people who I just immediately, you know, get into their work. And then all of a sudden I discover 20 new favorite people who I have to follow. It's a wonderful thing.
I was going to say, for those who might just be listening to us, that is a nice background you've got there. Are those in that glass case? Is that Lord of the Rings?
We Yeah, we have a lot of Warhammer miniatures here. quite a few. And Lord of the Rings, actually, is funny, was sort of my gateway into fantasy miniatures, because that was another point for me where I discovered that there was a miniatures game of, you know, Fellowship of the Ring and this Mines of Moria set that Games Workshop put out. And immediately just, you know, delved deep into a world of plastic and pewter figurines that you put together and paint. And so that's another obsession, but definitely another huge influence is that Warhammer world.
You know, it is funny, just, you know, some movies you hear over and over again as being influential, and Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring was a big one for me as well. There's a scene in Fellowship of the Rings where Gandalf is in Gondor and he's looking at through all the old pages and pages, you know, of old texts, right? And that was one of the, as dumb as it sounds, it was one of the big reasons why I started reading classic literature.
It's amazing,
right? I was looking at it and I was like, holy, just the idea that, you know, the old paper and the history and, you know, and all that information. I was like, I want to do that. So I just had this vision, like going to these old books. I used to collect old books after that. Old bookstores and being like, imagine myself as Gandalf going through these old, all these papers, going, you know, papyrus and all that. I'm being like, there's information here, important information. I will learn it all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's amazing. I love that, because it's discovery, right? Like, it's just, and you know, it's funny. I love, you know, that question that you had, because it just, it happens. So like at every age, it happens constantly. I think if you're always going to be curious, especially people who are so interested in creating things, or at least interested in the process of creating things, or whatever it is, or just art and story in general, which I would say is, you know, hopefully everyone, but in some fashion. But yeah, I mean, I think that's fantastic, because so many people take so many different things away from that. Like the fact that you just went on, you know, completely down this classic literature, you know, element, especially with, you know, history of Lord of the Rings and Tolkien and a lot of that, is fantastic. That's so cool. So what do you have any favorite classics that come to mind that were a direct result of that?
Oh, there's so many. Like I said, I'm now an actually English teacher in high school.
Amazing! Look at this!
I actually teach classic literature all the time. And some of my favorite works came from that. The Divine Comedy with, you know, Dante. I you know, that was one of the early ones I picked up. So I was cool, like, this is amazing. Obviously, I had read Lord of the Rings prior to the movie, but I had, that's classic. There's a lot I just kept reading.
I love this.
And then eventually, you know, I started reading, getting deeper, you know, the Shakespeare and Marlowe and blah blah blah. And my father was like, you know, what are you gonna do? You're going back to school, you're gonna do something, because I had changed my goals in life. From I was a primatologist before, and I decided to stop doing that and move to something else. I went into teaching. I was like, am I gonna do history or am I gonna do English? And I had started collecting, you know, these classic literature texts, and I was like, it's English.
That's awesome. Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah, I mean,
that's huge.
It's amazing what fiction does to you. Like, great fiction just changes. You know, it can change you completely, you know?
Totally. I mean, it just changes, you know, it acts as, I think a lot of, you know, great fiction does this, whether it's not necessarily an emulation of character is the literal reading of it, but I think it also just acts as a great influence, as a good influence to, in so many areas of your life. Like, not saying like, I'm going to be like, you know, this person or whatever it is, but it's just like, you know, there's a lot of, emotional understanding and maturity that comes through it. And again, at any age, like not just when you're growing up. But it really has had, you know, such a profound impact on my life and on the lives of most everyone I know. And that's just one of the magics of it. Yeah.
So since you were inspired, you know, through Lord of the Rings and, Neil Gaiman and stuff like that, when you're writing, somewhere in the back of your head, are you thinking to yourself what you're writing could be what's going to be inspiring the next generation to want to do something in the realm of fiction?
No, and probably because I am just an anxious mess and very self-critical. And I have the imposter syndrome is out of this world. Just because, you know, it's just like, I'm, you know, I'm going to be grateful if, you know, five people pick this up or something like that. And so it's on one hand, it's extremely nerve wracking. And on the other hand, it's extremely reassuring in that, you end up circling around, you know, just circling back around to, well, I just need to tell the stories that I'm most passionate about. I need to tell the stories in the way that I want to tell them, you know, within reason. Like, don't, you know, be such a I'm not going to delve too far into that, but basically, you know, don't be, can I curse? Okay. Just don't be such an asshole to, you know, anyone that you're working with or, you know, being asked to work with or anything like that. Cause, it just gets, you know, we're only here for a limited amount of time. And, you know, I think that's a huge part of working in any field, but especially in the industries that we're talking about, is just that, you know, these are high pressure, high stress, a lot of times environments, and everyone's trying to do their best, and there's going to be disagreements, and, you know, you're going to work things out, but I think it's a big part of it as well. So really all to say that in summation is just that, you know, I think I spend far too much time worrying about if I'm actually good enough to do something and just worrying about making sure that everyone's taken care of, that I haven't really thought of it, to be perfectly honest, because it's kind of scary.
Well, I mean, when you're writing a title like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know it's a built-in audience, you know you have readers. I mean, isn't, you know, like I write some indie books on the side, and when I release something, there's always a question of, is anyone going to pick it up and we're going to read it?
Yeah.
When you're writing Buffy, you know there's an audience, you're guaranteed readers, right? Because they're going to want it because they know the character, and the character has been in the cultural consciousness for a while now. Mm-hmm. Does that relax you knowing that the book is going to be out there and it will have readership, or does that add further anxiety knowing that these people have expectations already on you before you have even written the first book, that they already know, like, you know, I know what Buffy's supposed to be. I've been, watching the show for 20 something years.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's basically, again, both, cause it's, you get that element of anxiety and that element of reassurance. But, I think a lot of it is, you know, in order to take on a job like that, I think there doesn't need to be a specific, you know, hill that you're willing to die on immediately, I guess, from that point of view, when it comes to characters or anything like that, or, you know, screw everyone else, I'm doing this thing. But you know, there is a reverence to and a love for what's come before, and the characters especially, is just like really deeply, you know, on an emotional level connected with me in a very deep way and a profound way, and changed my life. It was one of the things, the stories that changed my life. It's up there in my holy trinity. But I think that you know, you can let that fear derail you a bit. And so you just have to make sure that, at least for me, it was just, it's very important to try and, you know, within the bounds of what's allowed and, what the story arcs are, and if the publisher has a very specific place they need to get to and you need to get them there, you have a sandbox to play in for sure. You know, some jobs are a bit more open and some are a bit more driven and clear in where they're going. And so you just have to, if you're accepting that job, play within the bounds of that and tell the story that you are on an emotional level most connected with and want to do, you know, desperately want to do for these characters. Cause a lot of that question of, you know, people are going to be picking this up. They have very specific ideas of, you know, how, you know, Willow talks, for example, or, you know, how this relationship is supposed to go, or, You know, there's a lot of specificity there, and again, you just kind of have to sort of reassure yourself that so long as me, a person who has a deep and abiding love for these characters and the new way that we're telling the story, that that's going to resonate with other people, because it'll be a pretty universal, you know, and shared thing.
Now, with once again with Buffy, once again, everyone knows Buffy was created by Josh Whedon, who is well known for the dialogue, you know, the kind of like that quippy kind of very fluid dialogue. You have also, because it's a TV show, you also have the cadence of how the actors speak and how they deliver lines. When you're trying to write it, are those things that you have to keep in mind, the rhythms that we didn't use or the actors, or because it is something kind of separate, are you kind of trying to push that out of your mind and go, I will kind of focus on what I think they kind of more should, you know, they should feel like this, or this, what serves the story best at this moment?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the first thing, and it's an interesting, you know, situation to come into, because I started on Buffy with the Hellmouth event, crossover, and, you know, one of my best friends, Jordy Belair, started the new sort of Boomverse, the Buffyverse that Boom's doing. You know, back in, I think it was 2018 at this point, I'm trying to remember years. But yeah. And so, you know, when I came on board, I believe it was about issue 8 where, Buffy had gotten up to, and at that point, Jordy had done a lot of that, work in terms of establishing a new status quo in 2019 for Buffy. And so, you know, basically it just, a lot of my work, came in on the, you know, coattails of Jordy and the way that those characters, you know, were built up. But I think it is very, you know, important again to have that love for and that care, and sort of compassion for the story, because that sort of drives everything else. Like, there's definitely times where I've rewatched episodes to try and get a cadence right, or to try and get something right, you know, because it works in our world as well. It works, you know, specifically, you know, I'm thinking of the characters of Anya and Wesley in our comics, because they are certainly different in terms of, you know, their lives and where they are and what they do and how they're brought in and introduced and that sort of thing in our world versus the show. But I think that, you know, it still plays into an element of who they are and how their characters sound and that sort of thing. So you want to get the cadence right. Like, a character like Giles just lives in my head, you know, 24/7. You know, I obsess with Giles and love Giles, but, you know, and obviously, and Buffy and Willow and Xander are always just ever present, you know, so that kind of comes a bit, you know, I guess second nature because of having watched the show so many times, and love for certain characters and everything like that. But yeah, it's a bit of balance, because you kind of have to do that thing of the balancing act of making sure that you're staying true. The first, you know, most important thing is making sure that you're staying true to, you know, this version of the characters and their emotional arcs, and making sure that you're addressing that, you know, responsibly. But at the same time, there's a lot of fun in making sure that you know, get the cadence right, or you make sure that you get, you know, a certain word here or two there, you know, right, and just getting the energy of somebody down and how you can bring that into the comic world versus the show, or even, you know, adapting again from a lot of the Buffy comics that have come before, just how you can play around with that in the comics medium, and give something, you know, for Xander dialogue, a bit more of a frenetic pace to it, or, you know, just however that breaks down, you're always trying fun experiments.
So you were a Buffy fan prior to getting the gig. You've been a fan.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I discovered Buffy late. When I was younger, I think maybe when I was in high school, my friend's sister would be watching Buffy, and so I catch an episode here and there and was, you know, blown away, but it was a bit more difficult to get your hands on the show and watch things in order, and I was very much a stickler for that, and so it didn't happen until later, and again, Jordy, well before either of us were working on Buffy in any capacity, was the person who really got me into Buffy. You know, and I was over at her place, like watching, you know, we were watching a ton of episodes, and luckily I was there for some really big ones. I'll say no more about the episode itself, but when I saw the body, I was at Jordy's house, and it's a good thing that I was, because I was an emotional wreck. And you know, but I got to experience, it's really cool that we were both able to co-write and work together on the series, because, you know, I definitely credit Jordy with getting me into Buffy, and it just became such a profound, experience for me, because I basically binged the whole show very quickly, and it means so much to me, and those characters, and, you know, just sharing that with dear friends really, really means a lot to me. And so it's been a part of me ever since, and getting to work on Buffy, you know, in any capacity, but especially being able to co-write and write, you know, some Buffy books has meant the world, and just something I really cherish.
So as you said, so you took over from Jordy Belair, who with issue 23,
I think it was issue 23. I started on Hellmouth, and then I came in and started co-writing with her on the main series with issue 17, and then took over, I think it was like 23.
Is it difficult to kind of take the baton from another writer? Because once again, there's a little writer who has established a voice on the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the comic book, you have, mm-hmm. which is based on another very well-known writer. I said Whedon had his voice. Yeah. Jordy put on her voice, and then you have you got to add your own. So, mm-hmm. are you trying to mimic Jordy? I mean, you have to kind of feel like you need to mimic Jordy's voice, or it was important to establish your own.
It's a great question. The quick answer is that it's another balancing act. The main thing that I had to do, though, was bring what I could to the arcs that were in my charge. And so there's a reality to that with, you know, basically, picking up the baton from another writer sort of mid arc. And also dealing with what's happening in the public with the publisher at large, and with plans and things like that. So there's, you know, and it's a burgeoning, it's a you know, still in the process of being built, but there, it's not a secret really anymore that there's a Buffy verse and there's a Boom verse really to this, to the Buffy comics. And obviously you have the Angel line and Willow, which happen sort of in our world. But one of the big issues that we did, and sorry if anybody's, I'll put a spoiler warning up here for anyone that's that hasn't finished it or is just about to get started or anything like that. But with issue 25, it kind of broke everything open in terms of a multiverse existing. And there's, I'll leave the you know, little Easter egg in at the end of there. So I'll keep that for people to discover. But, and, you know, so now we're getting books like Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer, which is a wonderful book. And it's, you know, sort of old man Logan Buffy, right? And so you're getting this Buffy in her 50s and just kicking ass. And it's such a fun take on the character, and something that I think is really cool to see. But there's, you know, sort of, there's a lot of potential for what's next. But getting back to the original question is that, you know, it definitely is this you know, task really of circling back around as much as you possibly can. Your North Star is the fact that you're writing this, and you're writing this solely right now. So you have to do right by that and your plans as much as possible, because like some of that's not possible, but you really have to just sort of stay true to that North Star and do your very best. But I have such a reverence again for what Jordy has done. And, you know, our story now is a continuation of all of the foundation and groundwork that Jordy's built. So that exists in our book. I carry that with me along with any of the plans that are coming from the publisher. So it's just, you know, making sure that you tick those boxes and then, you know, carry it as best as you can forward with as much, you know, I guess bravery as you possibly can, right? Because you need to suggest new things. You need to plan new things. You need to build new things on top of what's already there. And sometimes those are a hard left turn. And so, you know, I'll email the editor on the series, whatever it is, and we'll, you know, we'll figure it out. And, you know, sometimes it's a bit more of a surprise than others. Right. But it's necessary, right? It's the crucial part of, you know, doing something that, I mean, it's the crucial part of you being on the book. Like if you're, you know, taking over, you're doing something else. Like, yes, you obviously have to, for clarity's sake, you know, bridge any gaps and things like that. But you really have to trust your gut and run as far as you can with it.
So when you're writing Buffy, right? Because once again, you my understanding is that, having read the first issue, is that it's Buffy, but it's obviously a slightly different Buffyverse than the TV show. They're on slightly different tracks of existence.
Yes, very much so. And it's basically Buffy in 2019. We got cell phones. Yeah.
And one aspect, obviously, of Buffy, because her introduction as becoming a Slayer is during her formidable years. I mean, she's a teenager when she becomes a Slayer. So obviously she's growing as the stories progress, right?
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about her as a character, as you're writing these issues now, now up to issue 33, about to be 34, how are you thinking about her growing as not only an individual, but also as a leader during the run that you're writing?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one because of, again, the introduction of, let's say, this multiverse. There is a massive question with Buffy, and that's you know, just a bit of a crisis of confidence and in who she is. And I'm, you know, tying that a lot to my own high school experiences and you know, my friends, where it's just like, just there's a, at least at this particular you know, point in time with Buffy, there's a deep unease with, you know, who she can become and who she is and you know, what freedom there is in that. And a lot of that, you know, exists in the show as well, but we're introducing, you know, we have Kendra and Faith and a lot of different characters that are, you know, performing the job of the Slayer, let's say. And so there's just so much as a leader, right? Buffy is trying to grapple with this and trying to lead the charge. And I'll leave you to read the books to figure out how all of that goes on. But there is a huge, just emotional crisis that I think that comes with that, because it's just like, well, this person's better than me at this, or that, you know, but also like they should be doing this and I'm scared about, you know, what's going to come up with X, Y, and Z with these, you know, characters, my relationships and life, just life in general. And it can be small moments and it can be big moments, but when you're, it's very difficult, I think, at any point in your life when you're faced with a big bad, whether you characterize someone or something as that big bad. And then it's just, you know, exponentially modified when you start bringing in, you know, just checking in with the fact that this is a human, this is a young human and a growing human and is going through so many of the doubts and fears, you know, that we all have. And I think, you know, not to give too much away, but with the multiverse as well. When you discover, you know, that there is another you, your world changes. And but also I think the fun part there and the very Buffy part there is that, you know, you change. I mean, you're basically the fear of other selves and the fact that you're, you know, just worried about the fact that, you know, there's other people out there and there's other yous out there. And it's questioning everything about yourself. And it's just like, well, what if they're better me's and that sort of thing. It just asks a lot of questions. I'm trying to, you know, dance around it a bit to not give too much away, but it really does address on an emotional level, you know, the self-doubt and the crises that come with that, in a very funny way. And those are going to be represented by characters, by big bads, by, you know, monsters and by vampires. And, you know, that's a lot of the fun of Buffy's, right? You can encapsulate a lot of those fears, in characters and antagonists, right. And bringing those into play and into the story where, you know, Buffy's very literally grappling with her own worst fears and you know, those very emotional fears and those very fears of the future, you know, when you're a young person that's told that, you know, they're solely responsible and now sharing a responsibility to you know, keep the world turning.
I mean, I think it's really cool. It sounds a lot like you're using the multiverse Buffy's to better define the Buffyverse Buffy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
By comparison, contrasting who they are, is that how you're also differentiating across from the different Buffys as well? How are they going to, within relation to, I don't know if you call her the Prime Buffy now. I mean, I don't know how you want to phrase it, but the Prime Buffy.
Yeah, Prime Buffy works, man. That's funny. Yeah, it's basically, you know, and you can use however many devices to do this, but it is sort of this, like, you know, mirrored element. You have a lot of characters, and in comics, right, there's essentially 22 pages per issue, and, you know, sometimes you get a bit more to work with here and there, but you don't have the time, especially with how vast the cast grew for the comic book. You don't have the time to cover you know, everything and every one necessarily that you want to, or, you know, certain things are going to fit and certain things aren't. But again, you're just coming back to that North Star of Buffy or Prime Buffy, Buffy Prime. And so it's that's the heartbeat of the book. And there's still going to be a lot of focus on characters like Kendra and characters like Faith and Willow. But I think that, you know, you do have to keep circling back around and use a lot of the characters who are introduced, especially when you're dealing with timelines and multiverses and you know, things like that. Like, you introduce a lot of, you know, funky mirrors, right? You're in a wacky house of mirrors, and the characters obviously have depth and their own journeys to go through, but they also, you know, with their introduction, introduce another, you know, element for Buffy and to further that story and that sort of emotional journey.
Because the cast is so large, is it hard not to lose characters within the story where you realize they're, you know, you haven't met them in a while, or they're kind of like, they're like falling off the cliff a little bit because you don't have time to really get into them or focus on them. You're kind of, you know, stuck on maybe one or two characters that maybe are now taking up the oxygen more than they should.
Yeah. I mean, you'll always find that. And the hope, right, is that that's in the first or second draft of the script, you know, where you catch all those things. But I do think that, that you do find, that certain things need to take, you know, center stage more than others. And that tends to be, again, for me, those heartbeats, right, of of a story, which are really just sort of very emotional scenes, you know, and angsty scenes, or you know, or just any scene that I think a lot of people would sort of, you know, look quizzically at, and it's not some big action set piece or anything like that, where you build, or at least for me, building the stories around those moments is key. And sometimes I'll realize it's the wrong moment to focus on in that issue, or it's not strong enough for, you know, whatever reason, and, you know, the context of the overall story. So you go in and change those things. But yeah, I mean, with a cast this big, you have a task of giving everybody their due, but while, you know, maintaining that first goal of making sure that Buffy's story is well told and is being explored in the right way.
And the big villain right now for the current storyline is Silas, who is like a massive apocalyptic level threat. I mean, he's not only a threat to Buffy's world, Prime Buffy's world, but
yeah,
every multiverse apparently as well. Mm-hmm. Running a character like that level, is there a scope problem where he's so large, mm-hmm, that it's hard to grasp him as, you know, or concern of grasp how a reader can grasp onto him as a character? And how do you confront that?
Yeah, I mean, it's big, right? It's huge. If you're having literally multiverse level threat, you have to find ways to make that a personal level. And what I wanted to do with Silas, there was basically some discussion before I was, you know, before I came on the series about a threat that is multiversal, right? Like almost just a Colossus level threat. And it's, or a colossal level threat. And it's basically just like, my instinct in trying to figure out what that could be is, you know, someone, a cosmic level figure, who did one of the things that I fear the most, and is in a way sort of eating worlds, right? Which is, memory, and taking memory from people and taking so much of their humanity away with the simple act of memory eating and sort of wiping them of friendships and of love in a lot of ways, and their fondest, you know, people around them and what they, you know and love about themselves and that sort of thing. So that was the biggest biggest sort of design level for me that connected on a very personal and immediate level with Buffy, where it's just like, if we can focus on, you know, her own memories and focus on the memories of her friends and the Scoobies and Giles, and that's going to be what kind of connects on, you know, on a very direct level, on an immediate sort of a story, you know, level A of the comic, then that's what can kind of lead to everything else, and all of the other multiverse threats or universe threats can kind of come after this to show the scope of what that is. But we sort of experience it through, I would say, Buffy and Faith are the two key people who were witnessing go through. There's a lot of twisting and turning with memories, but using both of their memories as a way to sort of have a through line through this entire arc of the big bad, and to show the threat level of the big bad. So really it was just born out of my absolute fear of, you know, forgetting, you know, some of the biggest, most important things to me and most important people to me. And, you know, just memory loss, really. It was a huge, huge through line and designing that big bad and a sort of emotional journey for everybody else.
Now, is it true that issue 34 is your final issue on Buffy? And is it the final issue of the series as well, or your run on it?
It is. So yes, it is the final issue of my run on Buffy. So issue 34 is our last dance, so to speak. But there is an anniversary special that I have a nice big story in, like an issue size story. So this is going to be huge. It's going to be really, really fun, and I can't wait to read it for all the other writers and artists that are working on it. But yeah, after that, it's done for me. In terms of what's next, there's a lot of new series that are coming out. A dear friend of mine named Sarah Gailey, they have a series that they're writing for Buffy. I could not be more excited. I've heard a little bit about it. That's all I'll say right now. But like that, and Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer from Casey Gilley. And yeah, I mean, I think that it's just really, really exciting to be seeing at what's next and what's coming up next for everyone. Because when I came on, it was kind of just like, you know, it was co-writing. And then Jordy had left the book. And so I was there, and I was, to be completely honest, like, it was almost like, you know, it's like, is this issue going to be it? Or is this one going to be it for me? Am I going to get the call? And they're like, get out of here. You know, you never know. And you know, to be totally honest, I figured it might be the case where I'll just get the phone call and be like, all right, see you later. So I'm very lucky to have stuck on for so long. And I really can't wait to be able to read what's up next for Buffy. I only know, like I said, what I've mentioned, but I know that there's going to be a lot of good stuff.
So what's next then for you?
I have, I've been sitting on a few announcements that I still can't say. Yeah. I've been really busy with basically an OGN, which will be announced at some point, I'm assuming this year. And I have another potential mini series that I might be able to announce in the next few months as well. So mostly just you know, waiting around to see what I could talk about, that kind of stuff. But I've been writing some new middle grade projects as well, which kind of returns me to my Goosebumps roots, which was the first sort of book that I was able to work on. I've been working a lot in that realm and fantasy and horror. So plenty more of that, you know, on the way. And I can't wait to talk about those, but I'm sorry that I can't say anything yet.
So are these creator owned, or are these working for a established franchise or company?
They're creator owned.
Creator owned. Yeah. Very cool. Creator owned. Very cool.
So yeah. So we'll see, you know, when we can say anything about it, but I'll let you know as soon as I can.
Please do, and come back on the
Sorry
show.
Sorry to be coy.
No worries, but come back on the show to talk about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Mr. Lambert, it was a great pleasure talking with you. I really liked what you did with Buffy. I look forward to your final issue of the series, figuring out what's going on with Silas and everything.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, sir, for talking with me.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a fantastic night.
All right, you too.